Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. Today, I'm speaking with Jerry Pradier. Jerry is a business trainer and author who also presents workshops and seminars for nonprofit and governmental organizations across the Western United States. He trains and certifies counselors, instructors, and entrepreneurs for the Institute for Civic Achievement. Jerry also hosts the program Progressive Business, broadcast daily on Aspen, Colorado's Grassroots TV. Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers, Jerry.
Hello, Karma. How are you?
I'm just dandy. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Wonderful. Could you tell our listeners just a little bit about your background and how your journey to public speaking success came to be?
Certainly. Currently, my title is Business Optimization Expert. And I also, as you said, I'm an author and a teacher as well. I have a company, Progressive Business Development Network, and through that company, as a business optimization expert, I mentor business owners, entrepreneurs who do not have the resources to have a full staff of experts to help them run their business. So I mentor them in all those areas they need training on. I got into this business through a roundabout way. Started out as an Air Force pilot and education administrator. In the Air Force, I was the dean for several Air Force and Pentagon schools of higher education. During my career, I created the official course for business presentations for the military. I was also responsible for certifying all of the academic instructors and creating policy for academic education for the Air Force. After my 28-year career, I moved into private industry. I was recruited to become chief information officer for the 55th ranked security company in the United States, and I also was the founding dean of their training academy, training all of their personnel. Currently, in line with the work that I do with business owners, I also do a lot of presentations at national and regional events. For example, the ISC West, local chambers of conference, small business development centers, veterans corporations, et cetera, and I host my TV show. On that show, what I do is I interview business owners and service providers. Many of them are deathly afraid of speaking in public, let alone to thousands of other people who are watching them on television. So I have to encourage them and use techniques to help allay their fears. So that's my background.
I bet it's quite interesting to help calm the fears of someone that if they can't even get in front of an audience and you put them in front of a TV camera, for some reason that's even worse.
That is, and I use all kind of tricks to get them to do this for me. But the funny thing about it is that after our interviews, I have yet to find one of them to say, when is our next interview going to be? They like it so much.
That's great. I mean, that's very encouraging.
Yes.
So given this sort of unique background that you have, do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill or something you were born being able to do, and why do you feel that way?
Well, I believe that public speaking is a learned skill. I have to do this with the work that I do encouraging business owners to speak. I believe that no one is born speaking or expressing him or herself effectively, let alone eloquently. So I believe that there's hope for everybody. I have three reasons for believing this, however. First of all, it takes two things to be a great speaker. Knowledge in a subject area is one, and secondly, the ability to communicate that knowledge effectively. No one is born with either of these two skills. It's learned and reinforced over time, or not learned and discouraged over time. It just depends on our background and what we experience that gives us that jump. I encourage everyone that I work with, all my business owners, to develop their speaking skills because good communication skills are very helpful for business success. I've always encouraged business owners to take every opportunity available to display these skills, and of course, many of them, if not most of them, are very reluctant to do this. But I've seen some of my proteges progress from being absolutely terrified of speaking in public to being very effective in presenting their ideas once I encourage them to take that first step. Although they are not world-class speakers with the little coaching that I do give them, they are able to demonstrate remarkably advanced skills over what they thought they could do. That's the first reason. The second reason I think it's a learned skill is based on my analysis that advanced skills involve both knowledge and experience. To give you a reason for this belief that it is a learned skill, I like to use Superman as an example. I think this works also for other superheroes, but I know most about Superman. Superman was not born flying or deflecting bullets. He had to experience these skills in order to use them at all. On his own planet, which was Krypton, he did not have an opportunity to display these skills. I think he wasn't even technically born yet.
Yeah, I think he was like an infant when Krypton was
destroyed. I think he was still in the gestation period, so technically he was born on Earth when the spaceship crashed. So I'm sure that the first time he fell down, or the first time he saw a bullet coming at him, he thought he was going to die. But in his case, he was placed in those environments, and he learned that he did have those powers, those skills. And I use skill and power interchangeably because those skill is a power.
Right.
The third reason I believe that it's a learned skill is by comparing public speaking to other great art forms. In every art form, there are technical aspects and there are creative aspects. The same with public speaking. If you look at surgery, painting, designing a rocket, you see that there are skills that can be taught in order for the person to even begin to learn those creative arts. But then as that person uses those skills in different environments and in different ways, they become more adept at using those skills, and then they can use them in even ways that no one else has used them. That's where the creative artistic side comes in. And that's the difference between an effective speaker and an eloquent speaker. So those are my three reasons for saying that it's a learned skill. The biggest obstacle people have in public speaking is fear. They fear looking foolish, forgetting what they're going to say, being judged negatively, or even being challenged by other people. The two-pronged process of overcoming that fear is to, first of all, recognize what you know as an expert and don't speak beyond what you know. Secondly, practice providing that information to others in public setting.
So, something you said earlier kind of sparked a question. You had mentioned in the first reason that you thought it was learned skill was that as you're growing up, you either learn and encourage or you don't learn and you're discouraged. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were. Do you believe that a person who maybe was discouraged can overcome that discouragement and become successful?
I believe that people can do that. A lot of discouragement that people experience come from themselves, believe it or not, because of the negative talk they give themselves, but they also get negative thought from other people. One way in which a person can overcome this is to, first of all, take classes in public speaking. There are lots of them out there. Just talking in smaller groups that you're more comfortable with, in business, for example, can start you on the way to overcoming those discouraging words. If you stand in front of people and present yourself as an expert, as long as you know what you're talking about, people will look upon you as that expert, I found.
Very true. Now, going back to my original analogy here, imagine that you are a public speaking superhero. What do you believe would be your main superpower?
I think that I would put a big red S on my chest for simplification.
Interesting.
The ability to simplify the message and the way I deliver it in order to use the best symbols, those words, those pictures, those analogies, etc., to translate my ideas across an audience of several levels of knowledge at one time. Ability to simplify what you say and make it meaningful to an audience that has a wide range of experiences and knowledge are the greatest benefits that you can give your audience. And I like to go to the author, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, who says, and he talks about designers, but I'm going to apply this to speakers. The great speaker knows he's achieved perfection, not when there's nothing left to add, but when there's nothing left to take away. So simplification is my answer.
Very good. Now, what advice would you give someone if they wanted to develop that particular superpower too?
If they wanted to develop this power, there are five principles that I use all the time when I'm getting ready to prepare a presentation. First of all, is I'm very aware of the curse of knowledge. Have you heard of this term?
Yes, I have.
Yes, it was in the book Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath. What this curse is, people have a certain level of knowledge. It might be a very high level of knowledge of a particular subject, and they have this temptation to present everything they know about it to an audience, completely overwhelm them. This is something that we, first of all, have to learn not to do. Use all the tools that you have available to you to help you to present only that information that the audience needs and can understand. For example, using analogies, metaphors, schemas, summarization, all of these tools will help you to avoid this curse.
Right. You know, I have a background in science writing, and that was definitely something that was a challenge for many people, because once you get a level, I mean, especially in the science, once you get to a level of knowledge, sometimes it's harder to translate down to a simpler meaning or understanding without losing some of the nuances of what a scientist is trying to tell you. So I was always balancing that, and it just seems to me that a lot of what you're saying are a lot of the things that I was taught when I was learning science writing, is that you take the analogies and you turn things into stories and you compare things that may seem really hard to understand to things that are everyday.
That's right. And I think it is those great teachers, whether math, science, those are the great teachers who can talk on the level of the student and not down to the student.
Yeah, there's always that danger if you don't pay attention. There's a difference between making something understandable and talking down.
That's right. So use those symbols that your audience can understand and relate to, even if it doesn't express everything in the concept that you're trying to present. But knowledge has to be led along by steps and not just thrown at people like a wave.
Very true. Which is why the science that's taught in the third grade is very different than the science that's taught in high school.
Exactly, exactly. But the end comes out to be the same if it's done correctly. The second principle, besides this curse of knowledge thing to avoid, is to limit the points that you want to make to only enough that are manageable in the time frame. For example, if I'm giving a 50 to 60 minute talk, there's no way that I will want to present more than 3 points of knowledge to an audience, because it's going to take about 20 minutes per point for me to develop it, give analogies, etc., metaphors, so that the audience can really understand what I'm talking about. I'll just flood them with information and they'll be lost. And the opposite of that is, for example, if I'm doing a PowerPoint presentation, I know how many slides that I am going to use within an hour in order to make that an effective presentation, and that is 20 slides per hour. So if I'm preparing a 3-hour presentation, as I very often do, I know that I'm going to have about 60 slides.
That's so, a very good piece of information, having that
sort
of ballpark.
Those are tricks a lot of people don't realize they have available to them. But of course, you have to create those slides the right way and not make a script out of them, but just bullet points.
Oh, yeah, and only a few bullet points per slide rather than so many that nobody can read the slide.
Yeah, no more than 8 per slide at the most.
I would be surprised if even that. I would have kept it more to no more than 5, preferably 3.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
But certainly 8 is overwhelming.
Yeah. The more you put on there, the smaller the font has to be, and the more the people have to squint at your slide, and they're not paying attention to you if they're squinting at your slide.
Exactly. The third principle is outline the points that you're going to make in some kind of logical sequence, whether it be chronological, historical, alphabetical, process steps, or whatever. Because when you do that, you don't have to rely on your notes so much and won't be reading your presentation. If it's logical to you to follow a certain sequence, then it's easier for you to present that sequence to others and easier for them to understand where you're going. The fourth principle is to illustrate the learning points with stories, especially stories about people, because people are interested in other people. If
Right.
you're not telling stories in your presentation, chances are people will not be relating to that principle as much as they would if they did get it through a story, because stories are easy to remember.
Right. I mean, that's one reason why we still know the Greek myths and we know Aesop's fables, because they
that's
were
right.
stories that involved either people or anthropomorphized animals.
Yeah. So finally, the last principle I would suggest is to layer each point that you make with as many sensory clues as you can put in the point, whether it be sound, music, your own voice, sight, showing graphs, PowerPoint or other graphic presentations, photos, handouts, models, mock-ups, touch. Note takers are very good for your audience to use to follow along, using models for them to touch or feel, even taste and smell. You can incorporate these in your presentation by having models that you pass around with, depending on the size of the audience, of course. So layer every point that you make with as many sensory impressions as you can.
For some reason, the first image that came into my head when you said taste and smell was probably like 20 years ago. A movie came out that was in Smell-O-Vision.
Yes.
And you got this card where you scratched and sniffed it right before the scene. And I remember my mom came home with the card and she handed it to me. She goes, smell this one. And you scratch it and you sniff it. I was like, oh, it was like dirty socks or something.
Yes.
And I just thought, okay, I can just see you handing out a card with a scratch and sniff this.
Well, I have burned incense in classrooms.
Oh, okay. I guess it would really depend on what the topic was, because obviously all those sensory experiences need to be relevant, too.
That's right. I had a boss at the Air Force Academy who gave a great talk in philosophy using the smell and taste of a lemon, believe it or not.
Interesting.
It wasn't even a cooking topic.
Well, I did go see a urologist who helped people with prostate cancer, and I went and saw him speak, and he was talking about the prostate using an orange, because apparently it's shaped like an orange. But boy, do I remember that speech.
That's one of those schemas that we use to get people to understand something that they're not familiar with using something they're familiar with.
Right, and both these examples that we've just given really show you can be creative in doing that.
That's right. And the more creative you are, the more people will remember what you say.
Right. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and knowledge with us today on Public Speaking Superpowers.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. This is the end of today's episode of Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on his picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.